business that set the dose of letting it go. First, on the agenda that I sent around, I had a typo. And at the bottom, the next meeting will be on Friday, November 22nd, just to be clear. So that's that. And I think I want to say that at the outset that some work is already going on, fast and furious, on the drafting side of this challenge that we have, reflecting directions that we seem to be moving in, always subject to swerving in a different direction as the decisions become clearer, both on the gaming side, the expanded gaming side, and on the current gaming side. We're making progress, and that's rough drafts. So I feel that we've got a shot at getting this thing done. We do have to make sure that we're that the draft in the end coincides with what we all want. So that's the trick. So with that said, I think we'll go right into existing gaming. And I did do a summary of sort of a consolidation of what White Sands had presented to us in the form of recommendations. And all of us here, and when they get down to Ted, maybe you could take the rest of them down the rest of the way.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
We'll make Paul around.
Oh, I see.
They just need to go on the far table.
Yep.
There you go.
Thank you. Okay, so we've got a whole set of recommendations.
I just want to let you want to stop the bidding.
We don't have rules for that.
Got a whole set of recommendations that come out of White Sands' work that run the gamut from the very specific wording change that's needed in a statute, according to their recommendation, to much broader questions. I think in it was their recommendation number 12, initiate a comprehensive analysis. And we're going to try to walk through these recommendations now. My sense is that we're headed towards a separate bill on existing gaming, mostly charitable gaming, but a little bit of trying to clarify definition of gambling machines, so that it will be a clearer what a sweeps, what do they call them? Slots, redemption machine means what that is. I think we're headed down the road towards a separate statute that will have both that in it and a provision for exploring the broader questions raised by White Sands, but that's what we need to talk about, how we're going to explore those broader questions, and whether some of those questions should be resolved up front. Last time when we met, there was some discussion in the context of structure for the expanded gaming of bringing racing and charitable gaming in under the umbrella of a gaming commission, which would have lottery and casino gaming and then racing and charitable gaming, which conceptually makes a lot of sense. I guess on reflection, my feeling is that that's something that we shouldn't rush into. We don't need to rush into, because it would take a time to set this whole system up, and taking that time and looking more comprehensively at charitable gaming than we're able to do in this time that we're allowed may get us to the right place, which may be exactly that place, but that we have the chance to do that. So we can talk about all of that. I thought maybe to start with, I'd turn to Paul, Kelly, and Tim, Ted Connors. I look at your sign, I want to say Tim. I know that you've been working hard on these findings and recommendations, and maybe we can walk through them with your help. We've got, time is limited on this, so you can't go into as much detail as you might like to, but let's see what we can do.
All right, well, using your document, we looked at actually three areas. One is statutes, one is rules, and another is essentially general policy. And I think you identified correctly number 12 is a good policy statement, because that's something from the year. When we look at, if we can get at 40,000 feet from it, we have to look at, I think, is when we look at the statutes, we have given some rough ideas with the chairman. I can certainly share those ideas with some of the committee's members today. When we look at writing rules, I think White Sands, I think, would agree with me. Writing rules is very robust and comprehensive thing to do. When you look at minimum internal controls, for example, that could easily go 500 pages.
That's a big undertaking.
So my sense is if we're going to do those minimum controls, and White Sands is recommending that we mirror a commercial casino, should we not wait to have that commercial casino write those rules so we have the same rules? Why would we be writing them twice, once for charitable gaming and once for casino, not knowing if we do get a casino or not? However, I think we should look at that and say, do you want us to go full bore on rules? And if that's the committee's recommendation, I need a few more resources to get that done. Or they may say, let's hold on the rules. And I think White Sands said to us, she didn't get here overnight, let's not cure her overnight. So we might want to wait to see if there's any legs on a casino and then use those rules. Having said that, we can move forward if you wish us to. So getting back and looking at the law, the statutes, we have identified the statutes and looked at the recommendations. The first recommendation was actually recommendation number two, and it was about the size factor and about the Attorney General approving the licensees. And I have offered some language for the chair to review, but essentially all applicants would go to the AG for his approval, and we would take it from there. If the AG did not approve, then we would not move forward. There was some talk last time that we would accept out the secondary game operators. I didn't offer that yet. I have the AG approving everybody, so we'll see how that would roll out for you. Again, I've shared this with the chair, his review. The second one we addressed was...
I guess I should interrupt. There's a cost to this, to your office doing background investigation, I assume. Which would be a concern, so we've got to keep that thought in my mind.
Certainly, I didn't address the costs on any of these. We have costs to our agency, as you would well expect, but to address White Sands' concerns, we pull off of that language. However, we have to polish it up. We gave the chance, recommendation number four was expedited about the charities, the point of compliance testing and reporting. I have offered some comprehensive stuff on that. I believe comprehensive, that's close to the statute. Knowing I can't catch everything in statute, we did put in a disclaimer saying that, for example, a minimum standard issue of X, and actually I made a page order of stuff, I'm not ready to really give it out yet. It's just, we're just working on it. It's not even until 10:30 this morning trying to put it together. But we also put language in saying that at the minimum it still have these things, and I'll throw a few things out. Invoices for all game and change related purchases, pre-numbered three-part table credit and fill-in slips so we can audit the slips, pit game table reconciliation sheets, cash poker reconciliation sheets. We've identified probably about 20 things that we've
So can I just ask you a clarification? Is this, I was, this is the game in employer operator, so this applies to them.
They're right? going to keep those records for right, us for okay. audit. And again, you know, we're glad you're here. You can help us where we may be a little lean on these. But we've also put in there that the commission at a minimum, but shall go into rulemaking for others, because it's this process always morphs. We always can get better rules. And so that's how we thought we would address that for the committee's review. And again, I'll work with the chair to roll out a final topic for the committee. Number six was a fees payable by charities. And that's when we talk about the 35%. And I did offer some language on that. Let me get to my language on that. Page 18, I'll address that. And I'm saying here that we're going to track all that stuff. And I'm saying there's been some, I think, perhaps the white sand has been the weeds more than the committee has on this issue, but the issue on netting. If there's an overage and games a chance, but the charity lost money the night before, they can net against that. The commission's always been opposed to that. I think this committee would be opposed to that. I think white sands would be opposed to that. So I put language in that would say something that there should be no netting or offsets of charitable or state revenue against classes of debt types or future or past game dates. So that's what we're going to try to address that with. And then we go on to say that there'll be absolutely nothing can come out, no fees, no anything. And we have that in some language for you to consider once we polish it up. So I think we're going to hit the ground running on that. The next issue that expedited was number 10. Actually, now those were the only ones that were expedited on Game of Chance. Now we're going to recommend number 10. The STAR should consider recommending a minimum registration requirements, include criminal background checks for those that are involved with equipment. We put some language in there, again, that they would have to go to a background check via the AG's office. I think we have, seven vendors in the state, six vendors, so that those would all be subject to that. So we have language in there for that. Recommendation number 11, again, it's about the 35%. We dovetailed that into the one we talked about earlier on, which was expedited. I think you'll see that once the chair has a chance to review some of my work to see if I'm on target or not. The document, that's in quick summation, what that document does, it addresses all only on the Games of Chance. I didn't do the racetracks yet. I did not do Bingo Lucky 7, just the Games of Chance. I think that was a major focus. And just so you know what the work document is, the statute changes right now, just they sound minimal in nature, but there are over 30 pages of statute change, so it's a comprehensive rewrite. It's not a quick rewrite.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure I understand. So are you, in essence, basically what will happen is a recommendation that it now be really 35% of the gross period?
That's always been since day one division. Always been division.
Yeah. Okay.
So the legislature, in my opinion, the charities and the commission's always been a concern of mine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Paul, I know you, on recommendation number one, you mentioned expedited rulemaking, the issues, the concerns you have with getting that done. Are there any other recommendations? I know you've only gone through the Games of Chance. Any other recommendations here that you don't agree with?
No, I think in style and substance, we agree with all the recommendations, Commissioner. And the other thing I was saying, in some press categorical difference, so I should clarify for the board here, I would say probably the majority of these we've already requested years through the years, and the legislature for one reason or another have said no. So that's why we agree, because it's we've been there, we've been fighting that battle, and now this will probably give us more ammunition to continue that fight this body.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just a little bewildered. I gather you're just hitting the highlights, but you've skipped a whole bunch of numbers.
Right. I only took the ones on the Games of Chance side. There were about six on the Games of Chance.
Okay, so we're got it. Okay.
I did the expedited ones. And
that's why we're skipping the other ones.
Right.
Got it. Thank you.
And certainly, if Maureen thinks I missed a highlight or if the chair does, we'll refall so you folks can see the product that I'm working on. And I apologize. The product is 11 o'clock this morning. I'm still reprinting it, trying to, so the chair would have something to take a peek at.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of what the operators are netting I mean, I guess before their direct expenses themselves, but I mean, you said 13, was it 13 million that you said that the charities get?
The charities making that.
Can you extrapolate that for what the operators might be?
We try to extrapolate that. I don't need data to share you right now extemporaneously, but I can probably get some ballpark with you. I think that data is probably going to be better driven by the Department of Revenue Administration, because I'm only guessing. Do I audit that number right now? The primary gamer operators, I don't, and White Sands, I discussed that very first meeting, is because of a restriction of resources, we look at three buckets of money. Is the state getting their share? Is the charity getting their share? Are the rules promulgated by the commission to protect the better being done appropriately? And once we get those three things, we have our reasonable confidence that our public mission is being done. What the game operator makes and how they spend their profits, we don't have that as any empirical data to give you right now. But I can certainly look at my record and try to build something back and give you a ballpark.
I mean, part of the reason I'm asking is following the chair's sort of comment about, you know, expenses and costs to do background checks and so forth. And, you know, it seems, at least for some of them, it's a fairly lucrative business. I realize there's small locations, but there's some pretty big locations. And it might be helpful just sort of getting a feel for that as we're figuring out.
We'll get back. Yes.
Chair, I guess the other thing I would point out, I think that the recommendation regarding the redemption slot machines or redemption poker machines and clarification on payment is an important one, and that's not under the jurisdiction of charitable gaming right now. So that may be something that this authority might have to initiate on its own or in some other context.
This is the slots redemption machine question?
Yeah.
That could be in the separate existing. I should have said existing gaming bill versus expanded gaming bill.
Right.
So I think that.
I mean, that's a very.
We need to look closely at what you found there and make sure it's right, and then if there's something there, it's easy enough to.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1.5 page statute.
I did offer the chair some language that he was really.
Yeah,
and what I did was that is sometimes what we do is we've seen a lot of legislation. I actually had for the chair to consider to see if it's worth rolling out to the group essentially a purpose statement. What's the purpose here? We see a proliferation of all these things throughout the state that's not in state control. So we'll see about the chair, but we did address it a little bit with the chair. Thank you.
Okay. All falls back here, then.
All falls forward.
Have you pretend to burst the crown?
That's why I'm getting the big bucks.
That's right. Right. So I think, unless I hear other views of this, that we're going to proceed down this road with this work that Director Kelly has outlined. To draft a bill that will include the other forms of existing gaming and bring it back before this group on, I would hope, the 22nd of November. Now, one of the tricky parts of that is the policy questions, and one way to do that is because those, we can't decide those policy questions here, or we could, but might not be wise. For that, my thought is that there's enough time for this, and that the questions that are raised by White Sands about charitable gaming are important enough, complicated enough. The time should be taken to look more closely at them than we can, and so that part of this bill would be to set up a short-term entity, call it a study, call it what you will, to examine and make recommendations on these broader questions of policy. Yeah. Turn yourself over.
Are we making any recommendations with respect to some percentage of revenues going to the Charitable Gaming Commission to pay for some of these expanded or Attorney General's office, whoever's going to have all this expanded responsibility.
Well, that's a good question. I would think, without knowing the answer to your question, that nonetheless, the principle that we've, I think, all concurred in is that this activity, gaming activity across the board, should pay for its regulatory costs. And so, with that principle in mind, I would want to include in this draft bill a provision that provides for that. I don't know exactly how that is done, but yeah. So shall I just take a crack at that and then see where we're at?
Okay. And I think, frankly, we will have that type of language in the draft on the commercial gaming piece, the type of language that talks about the capture of the cost of the background investigation and capturing
absolutely
from the applicant all, you know, from the regulated community, all cost of regulation. So once we have that nailed down, we can really duplicate that language in the other sectors.
Okay.
Oh, I just got to ask you a question. If I'm recalling right, a lot of jurisdictions, the tax rate on the table games is substantially lower than on the lottery. Is that right? I know that's true with some jurisdictions, and I'm wondering whether that has, obviously it's a recognition that there's labor, and it's just more costly to operate, and is it also more costly to regulate, in effect, and something that we need to be thinking about with a 35% tax rate, and still regulate it the right way and have that tax rate?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you see in a jurisdiction, say, for example, like New Jersey, that taxes, you know, an effective tax rate of 9.25 is what you might think of as a blended rate. Massachusetts is using a blended rate for table games. And
for table games and
video mock-ups.
They're all at 25%.
Whereas, you know, other states, Pennsylvania, for example, uses a much lower rate for taxation of table games, and they've actually just lowered it again. But I think when you look at the blended rates, if you will, that they kind of fall into a certain range. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it depends where in Maryland, for example, and Pennsylvania, where table games were added later. The regulatory apparatus is already in place. Table games is just an add-on. So it's really hard to determine whether or not, you know, what the costs associated with it are, because it's table games for both the operator and the regulator are more labor intensive, mm-hmm. but slot machines or video lottery terminals are more technology intensive. And so there's, if you're using a central system or when you're using individual personnel resources, they have to be fairly skilled accountants and analysts to interpret, review, and audit the product of the slot management systems. So it's sort of, it's I don't know it's not a satisfactory answer, but I don't think there's a clear answer. I think it depends on the degree of automation and, you know, other factors. And also the regulatory philosophy of the jurisdiction, because some jurisdictions take an approach where they, you know, trust but verify. They're very active in an audit and compliance context. And other jurisdictions, like Nevada, have a very strong onus on self-reporting and the dire consequences in the event of a failure to report. So, you know, it really all is where you have a comfort level.
Would you favor including in our draft, we're not going to set a rate. We've decided that. Going to defer to the legislature, but including a preference or recommendation for a blended rate?
Well, it's certainly something to consider. I mean, New Jersey, Nevada, I believe Mississippi, a lot of the long-standing, you know, jurisdictions do use a blended rate.
It removes the complication.
Massachusetts is using a blended rate, so it certainly is something to consider.
Interesting. And I was also asking sort of a related question, which is, in the case of charitable, there are no video lot of terminals or slots, and I don't think they're filling today. And so in that environment, thinking about the operators there, if we do put on them the kind of regulation that a commercial operator has and so forth, is the 35, effectively the 35%, actually it's higher than 35% what goes through the state?
State's blended rate. State takes a blended rate. It's 3% which opens have no monetary value, 10% which opens have monetary value, depending on what venue you are.
But it's higher than 35. I mean, if you add what the charities make.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes, yeah. The game operator is taking probably about 55%, 57%. And what our statute says, too, in general, I think you most of you realize what our statute is. Our money all is not general fund anymore. It's all the Fund 13, which is the Education Trust Account. Mm-hmm. And the statute says that the commission shall deduct its expenses, and then the remainder should go to the Education Trust Account. So in some instances, the tough part is the budget, trying to get the budget to get up and have the remainder go over. But then maybe that comes to the philosophical question, should the state try to be making money on charities gambling? I don't know. So that way we get more funds to regulate. Yeah.
Make money in any way we can.
Well, there you go.
Yes.
Can I say something? Can we just sort of stop this fiction that this is charitable gaming? It's not. It's commercial gaming with a certain percentage required to go to charitable institutions. It's not the old Rotary Casino night where you dress up and go once a year. It's really commercial gaming. I know it's called charitable, but it's not. Anyway, I've been wanting to say that for a while.
You're feeling better now.
I'm feeling much better.
I would just like to make one point when you're considering a rate, and you're talking about an existing sector,
yes,
and you're talking about imposing a new regulatory scheme for that sector, which will be a significant cost for them. And so I think that's
why I'm asking the question.
Yeah, that
can you still do what we're talking about, pay 35% to the charities, pay whatever it is the state,
and
can you make money?
Right.
Maybe you can. I just don't know. Because the operators, it's a business for the operator.
Right.
That's what it is.
Right. And that's where, again, I think the investigative process in the normal course of gaming, you go through your background investigation. And
These,
I don't know anything about these operations, but just speaking hypothetically, the background investigation should not be the equivalent of Caesar's Entertainment. So they should be fairly streamlined from a structural perspective, and that should...
One comment, your comment. It's not charitable gaming in that sense, but there are hundreds of charities that are dependent on this system. And I've got a list here of some of them, not all by long shot. They just range across every type of charity, from the strictly religious to the other end of the spectrum, small amounts, large amounts. Some are clearly very dependent on this system that's evolved, and that's the complication. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking at our statute, our statutory charge, and it includes identifying and drafting appropriate laws and regulations for ensuring a process for sustaining ongoing charitable gaming resources to charities in New Hampshire. So we have to keep that in mind as we go through this. It's really important, and I think we all share that concept. But as we get down into the weeds, it's easy to lose track of it. Our goal is to come out with a system that does exactly that, that sustains ongoing resources to charities in New Hampshire.
Well,
yes.
If I could just add to that, the other thing that's very interesting to me is the complete disconnect of the people that I talk to, because I'm from the western side of the state, which is, generally speaking, very, very anti-gambling, very, very anti-gambling, and you know, a lot of the people I talk to say gambling is a terrible thing, and, you know, it's, we don't want any of it in New Hampshire, and that those same people will say to me, oh, but my favorite charity gets X percent of their operating budget, and there's a real disconnect between those two notions that we as a legislature at least haven't done a really good job of giving, reminding people that those are both the two sides of exactly the same issue, as opposed to something that they can look at completely divorced the one from the other.
Okay, are we ready to move on? We'll take this back and work on it. And now we turn to expanded gaming. We made a lot of progress last week and in our work before, really. So that I think I have direction in the work that I'm doing with Attorney Williamson on structure. We're going to work up a bill that has a gaming commission with a full-time chair and four members who are not full-time. And we will have that gaming commission chair be over executive director, the executive director in the lottery, and an executive director for gaming. I'll call it expanded gaming right now, for casino gaming. You've all seen the chart, so I won't go further through it, but we seem to arrive at consensus on that. There was one aspect of that discussion that I just wanted to get clarity on, I guess, given the discussion we just went through. That was, I think a number of us, I may have been, voiced support for this concept myself at the time, thought that it would be good to fold in racing and charitable gaming under this umbrella. I said this when we started this session, I think before you walked in. While I still think that that may be the right way to go, I'm not sure. And I think since we've got time, since this whole thing, even if it comes to pass, is not going to come to pass for a while, that there's time to take a close look at racing and charitable gaming and make sure that's the right direction to go as opposed to some other direction. I would not fold them in this draft on expanded gaming at this stage unless you feel otherwise.
Mr. Chairman, just a little more clarification of that. I think it should be a kind of a standalone. I think if you bring the racing and gaming in with the lottery, which is so much bigger, and you bring the casino, which is so much bigger, with the problems we've had, the existing problems, nobody wanted the bingo, so it came over here. The Lucky Sevens, nobody wanted it. The Games of Chance, it was under the Chief of Police and the Attorney General oversaw part of that. They didn't want it, so it came over to us. I think that we're going to be so small in this big, big picture that we're going to get lost, and there's going to be no direction for the charities, not for the operators to come and see. I would recommend either we be separate, or we have a three-person commission, or whatever you want to call them, oversight, so they can handle the daily things and not even get involved in the bigger problems. It's we're minor, but we are big, and we do have control a lot of money. But I don't think that, I think if we put this, our division, in with all the others, we're going to get lost in the shuffle. Or the charities And then that's basically why we're all been involved in this. And I've been through every aspect of the gaming business, shall we say, because I've been on the commission since 1968. So I've seen the horse racing. And when they passed this charitable gaming like that, I think I was the first one to come and say, you just allowed many casinos in every street corner in the state of New Hampshire. And that's what's happened. And I think that we didn't have the money to set up proper rules and regulations. We'll discuss that, and everybody's cognizant of that. But I think that we should be either a standalone or have a separate commission just to oversee it so that it doesn't become a stepchild.
Any other thoughts? So, yes.
I think my thoughts are based more on how do we get there from here. We're drafting with a huge number of variables, one of which is if the legislature, we're suggesting regulations for a casino. If the legislature decides ultimately that they don't want a casino, then that's why we're sort of separating out the regulations for what we have now, as opposed to the regulations that may come along. And obviously, if a casino, if the expansion part doesn't fly, and I think that the point of having two bills is very sensible, but if the expansion part doesn't fly, then obviously we don't have necessarily the structure that would be talked about here. I still think conceptually it's a very good idea to have everybody in their separate divisions under a central control. And what I liked about the schematic that we saw is that there's the possibility for that. But I do think that whatever we do, we're going to have to do it in a set of steps. And it's really tough trying to figure out how we get there from here, because if we're not going to expand, then the changed regulation for what we already have is looks very different from what we would wind up with if we decided to expand.
Good point.
So that to me suggests maybe two or even three or more bills down the road that are incremental changes. Well, no, I mean, I'm just thinking about the number of things you put into one bill, each of which are conditional on something that may or may not happen down the road. And also, I mean, one of the things I'm trying to think about is, let's not put a huge amount of effort into drafting for something that may or may not ever come down the road. I mean, we're looking at best practices. We're looking at keeping placeholders for the policy that's left to the legislature. But I do think...
I think you're talking about the charitable side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, on both sides, but...
Yeah, well, I think...
But everything's conditional on one of the other moving parts. We've got to start somewhere, so...
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. You know, if there's expanding gambling, I wonder if you'll actually be really a real orphan if that exists and there's a totally separate agency, ultimately. Because I would think that having a structure where there's a lot of resources, a lot of expertise, and you know, frankly, probably an opportunity to have appropriate resources being put to the charitable gaming, greater, which would be part of a bigger picture. I also wonder, as I'm thinking about what the chair read a moment ago, about having to be to try to ensure that there is, that's not mine, to have some duty or sort of goal of continuing to have money flow to the charities, if that's part of the Gaming Commission's role and obligation, they'll be thinking about it as they're making other changes in the future. I think it may actually be wise long term. I'm not sure that Representative Weber should be right that it needs to be done in steps. I'm not sure, but I think looking ahead, it might be wise to have it under know, a commission. You know, perhaps it has its own advisors or a group of advisors or something, but I think it might be one.
Yes,
I agree with the Attorney General and Representative comments. And I think by putting this together, it does a number of things. I think one is over an overarching commission, charitable gaming would have a certain amount of autonomy by having your own director. And so I think that would still be there. My concern is with the redemption slots, which we're talking about, rolling those in to your operation, and with the table games. And we're also looking at, having some uniformity between the regulation between commercial gaming and charitable gaming. And my concern is if you are a small standalone entity, I don't see that uniformity happening. I see over time that how charitable gaming is regulated and commercial gaming, if it comes to pass, there isn't going to be the uniformity there. I also think there's an efficiency, and I think that, as you said, I mean, I was captain of the state police when I oversaw gaming used to be end of me, right. Charitable gaming, you remember that well. And it is a relatively, I mean, a lot of responsibility and resources are not there, which I think they need to be. I think you need additional resources. I think all of that has a great opportunity to bring all gaming. And I would say this, if the table games and the slots came off the table and weren't part of charitable gaming, I would agree charitable gaming should remain separate. But as long as those table games and the redemption slots are going to be, I think that's gaming, as you say, Kathy, and I think under one commission, I think that's where we're going.
All good points.
On behalf of the lottery, I agree with you, Commissioner. And quite frankly, I think you've been treated like a stepchild to this point. So I think that if you did have a position in everything Gaming Bureau or whatever it is, that you would have more resources and could more effectively govern and enforce charitable gaming.
I agree with everything that's been said over here, again, because as I said, we are talking about commercial enterprise, albeit a hybrid with charities. I'm also cognizant, though, of the fact that we do have a structure in place, and when we had testimony, it seemed that those folks who were involved with that structure told us they liked it, they thought that it worked well. And so listening to what Director Connor is saying is I don't think we want to lose sight of what also works well, and maybe what we do is if we bring it over, that we also bring over some form of that, let's call it a commission, subcommission, that deals with the racing and charitable gaming, because that seems to be popular with the people who we've heard from. It seems to, it gives a specific focus of oversight by a group of people over what's happening, as opposed to being lost in the broader agency. So perhaps we can sort of just bring it as a whole almost over into this revised Lottery and Gaming Commission, so that they're basically brought over. I don't know if you shrink the commission a little bit, maybe you don't need as many members, but bring over something like pretty much what we have now.
That's one of the options that you identify.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe we're coming into a common place here. Because we could do this. I guess there is an option of phasing in this kind of a changeover, so it doesn't happen all at once. So that's a thought.
What I see sometimes too, you look at my answer with John Desai, because I'm the director of your Racing Charity Gaming Commission, but I, I sort of like the idea that maybe that subcommittee step before you get to the full five member or whatever is gaming, because I hate the most important work you're doing, opening hundreds of million dollars casinos, and I had to bring up today. Well, at least that B3 was called, but no, B4 got covered first for $50. You know, it's all tied up. It comes to do with the six member commission. You know, sometimes we have that little gate to stop me, and I can get that stuff flushed out before we have to go up to the big gaming authority on that. It was interesting when we first started the game. The first complaint I had was, this is the big one, you know this well, because you had the complaint was the door prize, there was a teddy bear, and the other lady got the teddy bear, so she took the teddy bear and hit the other lady over the head with it and broke it, and we get this whole thing with the teddy bear escape. So I don't know if you want that to go up to the gaming, or do you want to keep it down a little bit longer?
Yeah, I think you made a good point. Well, as I said, maybe we're in a common place here, and I could proceed with the drafting with Attorney Williamson that included gaming and racing under this umbrella with a form of the existing commission with an important role with respect to the activities of racing and charitable gaming. We'd have to think that through, just how to define that. And I would also work out a few options in terms of timing, so those could, when it comes back, those would be options for everybody to look at, whether this would happen immediately or a year down the road or whatever, but the structure would be set. So that's how I guess I would proceed, if that's acceptable. Do I see any dissent?
Wait till we're actually looking at words on the page.
Okay. And then at our last session on expanded gaming, we also came to agreement on how to handle rates of taxation or the state's share. Some people don't like to call it taxation. Of revenues and fee levels and so forth, and I believe came to an agreement that kind of decision making we would defer to the legislature, to the general court for decision. So I think that was agreed to. So that was progress, and we're left with what's left.
Well, I was going to say subject to reporting to the general court the overall parameters that White Sands
yes, and in our report
had,
we would,
had explained of, you know, what we think, what White Sands advises us is fiscally acceptable for the kind of operator we would like to
exactly
attract,
right.
But that the ultimate question
is... So our report is an important piece of this. I didn't mean to leave that out, but you're absolutely right. Providing information for that legislative choice. So we've got a lot of information. So beyond that, expanded gaming, is there any other issue that... Oh, you worked on regulations.
I was going to bring up the regulatory side of things, and one of the things that we started turning our minds to sort of at the end of last meeting or at maybe even after the last meeting was Ms. Williamson was saying that there are all these things that, you know, you set out the broad parameters in the statute and then you turn to rulemaking because it's far more nimble and quick. And alas, in New Hampshire, rulemaking isn't necessarily nimble or quick. My committee often sees people saying, can we take this out of rulemaking and just put it in the statute because it will be done, particularly if it's something you think of in November when you can file a bill, you can get it done by the end of June. And so I thought that I can draft something, but I thought that one of the things we ought to think about in the context particularly of expanded gaming is JALCAR process or exemption from JALCAR process. There are agencies that are exempt that do their own rulemaking within the agency or authority, but and so you could draft something that would require the commission to have notice, hearings, public comment, timelines, whatever you want to put in there, but without the whole JALCAR thing, which is oversight by the legislature. I think if that's the route that the commission chooses to go because of the nimbleness factor, we also need to consider the political factor of, that I know my friends to the left have run across many times, of the things that they have suggested by statute that we do that will make things easier and quicker, and the legislature then says no. So, I mean, the trade-off is not having as much oversight by members of the legislature, and I don't know how that flies. So the drafting on that is not particularly difficult. The issue is more, again, of
what
a policy
kind of time
one.
Differences are we talking about?
How long does it take?
5 to 6 months. Typically, we just adopt a rule in JALCAR. We did an emergency rule. For example, we said that we don't want any of the bingo calls having cell phones and texting, because we're seeing bingo calls on their phones, and of course that's completely something you don't want. And we did an emergency rule because it does affect the public because there's money involved. And JALCAR said that's not an emergency, so we couldn't adopt it. So now we have to go into that longer, arduous 6-month process. And I would say that under 541A, we do have some exemptions on the RSA 284 side for rules, and maybe this is something we could look at. Yeah. Our exemptions under 284, which is the racetrack side, says we don't have to go to JALCAR for the types of wagering. For example, for a trifecta rule, it doesn't have to go to full JALCAR.
Well, this was the exact thing that I wanted to ask about, is are there some existing exceptions, and if there are things that we could do by incorporating industry standards or something like that, that may be the way to get around it. So maybe I'll just chat with you afterwards and see if we could come up with some thoughts on that, and then we can bring them back to the group for whether you want to go in that direction or not.
The same thing, I think, for your tickets. You don't have to go always to JALCAR.
Right.
And
that's very much, if you look at the other exceptions, they're generally things where either they're accepted engineering standards for highways or things like that, or things that change relatively quickly but are looked at by some kind of industry standards.
Well, I think the truth is that this is complicated rulemaking, and although some will be building off of industry standards, it's going to be unique to New Hampshire and
right.
Take off from the statute, so that I don't think that's an easy out.
Right. Well, I don't think any of it's easy either way, but
this one. Yes.
And I would just share that it's very typical for enabling legislation to include an exemption or a special rulemaking procedures. And one of the things you might explore, Pennsylvania has a very comprehensive legislative review process of rulemaking. And my recollection is that the Gaming Control Board had like a 2-year exemption from that process in order to get the initial set of rules done. And they had sunset provisions, and there was a definitive timeline, but it gave us enough time to not have that. We still had the full 30-day comment period and all of that, but we didn't have that super review for the first few years. So that might be something to explore that would be sort of the standard approach.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. Yes?
When they done as temporary rules, we did them as temporary rules and then permanent, but both the temporary and the permanent there, to my recollection, would have had would have been subject to that legislative review. Now, New Jersey has a temporary adoption statute that was heavily relied upon by the Casino Control Commission and Division of Gaming Enforcement, and that gave us 180 days to do a temporary rule, and it had to be converted to permanent. Mm-hmm. But that was tremendously helpful during certain periods where there was a lot of new technology coming down the road. And obviously, you didn't want to have, you wanted the jurisdiction to be competitive and to have access to the new products, but you didn't want to have them go on the floor without, proper review and without regulations. And so the temporary rules were used fairly extensively on the technology side.
What about interim rules? Did you inquire about that?
Well, what our Administrative Procedures Act, and please somebody correct me if I'm wrong about this because I looked at this relatively quickly, is they have provisions for emergency rules and they have, but that's, you've got to show that there's likely to be harm to the public, and that's not something that the folks over at Jalcar take lightly of yeah. approving. And then there's an interim provision as well, but that one didn't look particularly streamlined to me if uh-huh. if what one was trying to do was get something to move quickly. Okay. So I'll look further.
Okay, well.
I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Experience with the interim rules, is that a 30-day contract?
Yeah, it doesn't really get us a lot. I think, and I have to look at my interim rules only last like 120 days. If you go through all this work, you might as well just go before
Monty. Yeah, because I had, I knew that there were references in the omnibus to interim rules under, I think, RSA 541A, and I have been relying on that. So if that's, we need to know a little more about that because
the interim rules have a very short time frame you can use them. And I can't remember if it's 120 or 150, but there is a time frame.
It's pretty short.
It's pretty short. And then you have to start the process to go into permanent rules. So in some respects, most agencies that I'm familiar with, we don't usually go the interim rule. We just go through rules.
That's certainly significant.
Well, I guess what we'll do on this is, as always, options for the next time, and with the help of Representative Weber, we'll have an option on the development of the regulations. In the meantime, we can all be mulling over the pros and cons of moving more swiftly or less swiftly on this. Okay, add to that. Anything else on expanded gaming? We might be able to finish really early. It's really up to you to bring forward anything else. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just looking at no proposed interim rule should be adopted unless within 90 days of publication of the notice the committee votes to approve or conditionally approve the proposed interim rule. So then that's already stretching things out, and they are effective for a period not to exceed 180 days. So they've got 90 days to do them. They don't last.
Right. 6 months.
Right.
So they seem to be a sort of ephemeral creature, and I haven't worked in the rulemaking area enough to know how it works out in practice. But
anything else? We've got an enormous amount of good material, thanks to White Sands. Not just White Sands. I mean, a lot of people have done a lot of good work. We also had a good foundation to work off of with 152 and 152, the omnibus version. So we've got a lot of good material and enough to, I think, generate draft material for us to look at November 22nd. We'll see how complete that is on November 22nd. I'll get it to you before then, whether it's 24 hours before then.
12 hours.
I give you three. All right.
Always work better than the pressure.
My name is Supreme Court.